This episode is brought to you by Airy Living.
It's March, and that means it's time for a spring clean.
I genuinely look forward to this moment every year. I will purposefully set aside a weekend to clear out the house. There's just no feeling like it.
And nothing says spring clean like a new candle. Or is that just me?
100p on the same page. What is the point of clearing out if you can't treat yourself with a new candle afterwards? New season, new scent, I say.
Okay, so if this conversation speaks to your spring clean soul as much as ours, or you're looking for the perfect candle to give you that cozy reading vibe, then you are going to fall head over heels for this month's gorgeous sponsor, Airy Living.
I feel a sense of well-being just by looking at their website. Their aesthetic is so chic, but just wait until you smell their candles.
They have three dreamy collections to choose from. If, like me, you're looking for a candle to light that's going to boost your mood on a Monday morning or fight off the Sunday scaries, then their aromatherapy collection is going to be the one for you.
Or if you're looking to embrace a bit more of Mother Nature, then head to their botanical collection for scents rich and citrusy or velvety and sweet.
What's more is they are a company you can be proud to invest your money with. Produced out of the UK, Airy use 100% vegan wax. Their oils are free from nasty oils and GMOs, and their packaging is plastic free and fully recyclable.
Oh, and let's not forget that they plant a tree with every order. These will make such thoughtful presents for you or for a loved one, and you can use code RECOS25 for 25% off.
Just head to the link in our bio or our Instagram stories to shop. Thank you, Airy Living. Welcome to Book Recos, Between the Pages.
I'm Jess.
And I'm Lauren.
And we're the pals behind Book Recos.
This is the podcast where we chat all things books and just about everything in between.
You might think Illicit Affairs is just a banger by Taylor Swift, but it is actually an excellent topic for a literary masterpiece.
Having both read Green Dot, it got us thinking about other books exploring affairs in their many forms.
Hey, Lauren, I'm going to start us off with some lyrics.
Ooh, love a good lyric.
Look at this godforsaken mess that you made me. You showed me colours you know I can't see with anyone else. Don't call me kid. Don't call me baby. Look at this idiotic fool that you made me. You taught me a secret language I can't speak with anyone else. And you know damn well for you, I would ruin myself a million little times. Cuts real deep after reading Green Dot.
That genuinely could be the synopsis for this book.
Yeah, man.
You've nailed it. And also, you reading those lyrics reminded me of a point in the book, which we will get onto, where the main character says there are two types of people in this world. One who listens to music and listens to the lyrics and relates them to their life. And two, who just really appreciate, like, musicals. I don't know, music for music's sake.
And you know what? I'm actually in the second category.
Are you?
Yeah. Like, I'll just sing along after a whole song and not even know what the meaning is about and be like, what a sick beat. And then because I was thinking about, I found myself singing the chorus to Illicit Affairs by Taylor Swift. Mm. And then I was like, hang on, is that song actually about an affair? And then I read the lyrics and I was like, shit, man, that is about an affair.
Yeah.
So I'm actually second category, but I'm now applying first category.
Okay, I'm definitely.
We haven't even said
category.
The book.
Yeah, let's start.
The book, the main book we're talking about today, having just read it and adored it, it's 1,000,000% in my top 10 of the year, is Green Dot by Madeline Gray. Before we even go any further, do you want to drop the real synopsis, Lauren, and not the Taylor Swift lyrics?
Yeah. Hera is in her mid-20s, which seems young to everyone except people in their mid-20s. Since leaving school, she's been trying to kick and scream into existence a life she cares about, but with little success so far, until she meets Arthur. He works with her. He's older than her. He's also married. But in her soulless office, the large cold room she feels destined to spend her life in, he is a source of much needed sustenance. And though Hera has previously dated women, she soon falls headlong into a workplace romance that will quickly consume her life. laugh out loud funny, deeply moving and whip smart. Green Dot is the story about the terrible allure of wanting something that promises nothing and the winding, torturous, often hilarious journey we take in deciding who we are and who we all want to be.
And I only realised on page 100 why it's called Green Dot. How long did it take you?
Probably about till page 100 when she references the Green Dot of Instagram.
Yeah, it's definitely not mentioned before that. And also I'm someone that...
No.
Like, I could not tell... I think we've even said this on the podcast before. I could not tell you how to find out when someone was last online, like on WhatsApp or anything. I don't have a need to know when people are online and things, right? So this is just not something that's in my ether. So then when she referenced that, I was like, oh my God, of course she is obsessed with seeing a green dot, and that is why it's called Green Dot. And I was like, and you know how excited to get with the titles of the book.
I know. My boyfriend must have asked me about 5 times, like, do you know what Green Dot means yet? And I'm like, don't know. And it wasn't until I finally found out on, like, whenever it was.
Yeah, I think it's like 107 or something.
I was like, oh, okay. Green Dot Instagram. Yeah, makes sense now.
Now we got ourselves a green dot. And obviously it makes so much sense that because he's married, which we don't find out straight away, but obviously we talked about how this is an affair book, so it's not a spoiler.
And also the beginning of the book she starts with, you might be wondering why I spent so long with a married man.
Yeah. Because he's married, they only talk on Instagram rather than having her like constantly pop up as a number in his phone and things, hence the obsession with a green dot.
Yeah.
So I actually think what this book starts off as, despite saying up front having an affair, is about someone who's got to get a job, doesn't really want one, living quite a mundane life. And a lot of it is very funny about like office and job culture. So I feel like we should talk about that before we even get into the affair, because that's how we start off.
Yeah, because for many years she puts off, she's I think mid-20s, don't know exactly how old she is, but she's at the age where all of her friends have had office jobs for many, many years, but she's been putting it off by just doing another degree or like another, I don't know, a master's or something. And
we all know someone like that.
Yeah. So she comes to terms with the fact that she needs to go into this like work culture that all of her friends have been banging on about for many years. And she just doesn't know how to speak the language.
No. And so she first has to apply to all these jobs where she doesn't speak the language. And the first quote I'm going to share is about her like applying for jobs and interviewing and learning how to say the right things. She goes, so she gets some advice from her friend. She says, well, then what do I say? Tell them you like lists. Such authority Sarah has. Lists. Tell them that though you have, of course, implemented many more complex time-saving strategies over your career, you find that the best organization begins at the micro level. And for you, that means organizing daily tasks and long-term projects in a series of lists, which you then mark as completed at each step. She looks at me meaningfully. Trust me, people in office love lists. Bitch is not wrong. When I talk about my penchant for lists in the interview 2 days later, the HR women fucking froth. Ah, Mary Alice loves lists too, don't you, Mary Alice? Mary Alice looks up from the other side of the conference table where she's been doodling on my CV. I do. I love them. Snap.
The book is just filled with so many hilarious pieces of writing like that. It's just so observational about workplace culture. The one that really got me was like bring a shawl. I don't have the quotes, but when she goes to these interviews and they're like, oh, it is a little bit nippy in here. The air conditioning's always really turned up high because that's how, you know, we all know office temperatures are set for the male temperature, not the women's temperature. So there's like all these women are like sharing advice with her and what they should, how she should prepare for her first day. And they're all like, oh, you know, just bring a shawl because it gets a little bit nippy. And this shawl becomes an emblem of just how shit this job that she's entering into is.
Yeah. Not my current job, my last job. I used to have an office blanket in the office.
Yeah, I used to too.
Times are fucking hard, man. Now I have to pay for my own heating at home, so no, that's much better.
I used to have a work hoodie that I would keep at work because it would get cold.
Everyone
I never went into shawl territory though.
I think I'd have liked a shawl. She has, I mean, so in case you haven't got it so far, she's also so fucking drab, and I love her, but we obviously would not get on. I'm obviously like the exact kind of person she wouldn't want to spend her time with, because get this quote. I won't say the beginning in case it's a spoiler, but she's talking about someone. I'm fearful of what kind of bonding activity she would attempt to orchestrate if she knew. Sip and paint, probably, or like an escape room. I shudder at the thought. I fucking love both of those activities. So we're not bonding, but I still love her, and I love to watch her hate people like me.
Yeah, I would hate to work with her though.
I would, and I highlighted this quote when I read it, because I thought she hates everyone and everything, right? Well, not everyone and everything. She loves her dad, she loves her
Most
friends, whatever, but like she's quite a cynical
things,
person, which makes
yeah.
her a very funny main character. But she is actually a dreamer, and she does want to be in this mainstream life, but she just
Yeah.
loves to hate it, because here she's talking about her friend who studied law. And she said that her friend that's studying law kind of acknowledged that like it was a bit of a dickhead thing to like carry around your books instead of just putting them in a bag. And she's like talking about that, and her friend gets it, but also she is one of those people now. And she says, I quite like this for her. I liked the world that she granted me access to, and I liked the fact that I was not part of it. So she
Okay.
likes to be in the know and at like, but not one
Is
of them.
aware,
And I
which
like
is
that. And I was
probably
like,
why
that's
she
kind of
likes
perfectly
going,
her.
yeah, which is probably why she ends up in a job in content moderation for a news website, because she just likes knowing what the beef is. She likes knowing what the news updates are, but not really a part of it at all.
And speaking of her mundane job in content
Moderation.
moderation, that's the word. Much like when we read Freckles and it made me want to be a parking attendant, I really want a mundane job. And it's coming at quite a critical time when my current job's very stressful, but I'm like, oh, I would love to just sit and do one job all day and it'd be really mundane.
Wouldn't it be a luxury?
Oh, yeah. Now I want to be a
I know
parking
I'd fucking
attendant
hate
again.
it, but when she
But maybe
talks
I
through like the
wouldn't.
color coding of the content moderation, I was a bit like, do you know what? There's a start point, and well, actually, there's no ever end point to her role, because to her job, because there's always going to be fuckers writing inappropriate comments on news articles. But she clocks in and clocks out, and there's no taking it home with her, and that is
No taking it
heaven.
home. Every day is the same. You know exactly what you're going to get.
Yeah, you'd probably be bored shitless, which
I
is
don't think I
probably why she
would.
then explores an affair with somebody at work.
Well, yeah, because it all starts because she's trying to figure out if anyone else hates their job. And so the reason she reached out to Arthur, have questioned him, is who do you hate in the office, when she's like
Yeah.
never even spoken to him before. it kind of makes sense. And so moving on to Arthur then,
Yeah.
it got me thinking that much like, stay with me here, much like when you watch Planet Earth or Frozen Planet or whatever with David
Yeah.
Attenborough, whichever animal you meet first, you root for. So if you meet the hungry lion first,
Yeah.
you want him to get the gazelle. If you meet the baby camel first, don't know where camel came
Camel.
from,
Interesting.
you don't want it to get eaten by the
Yeah.
desert monster or whatever other animal is. So you
Yeah.
root for whoever you meet first. So we're rooting for Hera, who is the other woman in this
Yeah.
book, because we meet
You
her
are.
first.
You are. And also, he clearly is very. Oh, it did make me feel really sad for the wife, actually. I won't lie, because they've been together 20 years. This man is much more her senior. He's old enough to be her dad. And I mean, I've written in my notes from the book that she clearly has daddy issues, because her, like, I guess her background is that her parents divorced when she's maybe in a teenager, early teens, and her dad, like, goes to court to fight for Hera and to keep her. And he just sounds like such an admirable man, actually.
I really love her dad.
Just, they've got this really, really lovely relationship. And I do think she's put her dad on this kind of pedestal of this ideal man. And she meets Arthur and she sees in Arthur many of the character traits of her dad. And I think that's partly why she feels so safe around him. Because he, like, wears cargo shorts and, like, short shirts with no long sleeves. And is obsessed with smoothies. And he's got a dad bod and he's going grey. There's, like, nothing sexual about this man. In my opinion, it is just she sees her dad in him and she sees safety in him. And that's the allure of Arthur.
Interesting. So I didn't think he was that old because he's only like, what, 15, 14 or 15 years older than him.
I thought so he was like dad. Maybe. Yeah. Okay. But maybe the age her dad
But I think
was
the thing
when...
is still, yeah, you're, the older man thing is definitely still linked to daddy issues. I think you're right. Yeah. And so she, what we should actually say is that she doesn't know he's even in a relationship, let alone married. When she's kind of like starting to fancy him and pursuing him, and then they go home together. And at no point does he ever, ever tell her. So she, up until that point, she's not doing anything wrong. It's only after they sleep together that she finds out.
That's a real dick move, isn't it?
Fucking douche.
Yeah. And it's because his wife calls.
Yeah.
And she just knows, she hears this tone at the end and she's like, oh, I see what's happened here.
She even asks him who he lives with because she's trying to find out if he's like in a flat share or whatever because she's, you know, young. That was his point to say.
Yeah. Also, side note, how they call them share house and we call them house shares. Just really blew my mind throughout the whole book. Like, why are you calling it a share house? Call it a house share.
Maybe share house makes more sense though. The house is a share house. Oh, sounding too crazy to me. That's like when you say table too many times.
Or egg. Anyways, I get that he had his opportunity and he chose not to use it. And I was really upset. And I was just... I'll be quite honest. I went into this book thinking, oh, this is another sad girl novel.
I'd say it is.
Yeah, but I came at it with the negative, I would say more negative stereotypes of it and thinking like, I don't think I'm going to be thrilled by this book, but I was so wrong. Like I found it so engrossing.
Yes.
And I just flew through it, which is so much more, I don't know. Yeah. I couldn't put it down.
Yeah.
And like, you know what happens.
Yeah, everyone knows what this is going to. She says it herself at the start. Obviously, we won't go into the minutiae because you should enjoy it for yourself. But it's just really sad that she loves this man. And he did that to her by not telling her up front because she could have gone backed away before she was in too deep. But she says because of, you know, maybe it's because of the abandonment from her mother. We won't read too much of Hero's feelings. But this quote here, she says... my decision to continue is a difficult thing to come to terms with, maybe. Perhaps you'll suggest that I should have halted at this point, as it would have been the ethical thing to do and it would have protected my feelings. But what I really wanted was feelings to protect, and here they were, so I would go on. And because she just felt dead for a long time and she was in this shit job and whatever, she was like, oh my God, I'm finally feeling something. I'm capable of feeling something. So that's actually what she clings to, that happiness and the...
the safety.
The fizzy feelings.
Yeah, fizzy feelings.
That's what she's clinging to.
She just, I'm not to go keep banging on about the dad point, but it is like she's finally met somebody who makes her feel as safe as her dad makes her feel. And he also does, he laughs at her jokes. Like there's a point in the book where she goes to England, right? And she tries to like make friends with English people and goes to a gallery. And her jokes are quite funny. Like the jokes she makes to like try and bond with these people, she's making an effort, but they just don't get it. And they look at her like she's got three heads and she comes away so deflated and she misses. And she calls Arthur and Arthur FaceTimes her. And she says like something to Arthur and he immediately responds by laughing at her. And laughing with her. And I think for what she feels really seen by Arthur, and Arthur, they do genuinely have a good rapport and relationship. Yeah,
I do believe that he loves her.
Yeah.
And that he's really conflicted. I don't think it's fair that he keeps dragging her down, but I get it. He loves her. I do think they love each other the same. And yeah,
do you think
I just...
he loves his wife?
Yeah.
Oh, that just really bothers me.
We never see that side of it.
And I'm desperate. I wanted one scene of just seeing how he communicates with his wife, or like one day in his life with his wife, just to see like, what does their relationship look like? Because he's clear, he's been with this woman for 20 years. Obviously, your relationship looks very different in 20 years to how it does it like 10 minutes in. But, and he's almost getting a bit too, he's forgotten that he has a different kind of love with his wife. And it's a much, you know.
Yeah, I think he loves them both.
Oh, it was so sad. But
as Hera says, I do want love. Who doesn't? I want to fall in love with someone who loves me back. And here I am falling. So I decide, standing in this dank alleyway, I decide I'll settle for a sliver of love that I want.
Oh, that's so depressing.
Yeah.
And because of, I guess as well, like what's surprising is how she's not that person. Like she's not a person who's ever conformed, or I don't want to say the word conform, but like she hasn't gone down the quote unquote traditional life route in any area of her life. And when she meets Arthur, arguably actually, it's when she gets the job and she goes down the corporate path. And then that's when she's like, okay, the next thing here is a relationship. And then the next thing is a house and a baby down this traditional life route. But she's not that person at the beginning of the book. So I think that's why it was so surprising to me when she did like start, like you start seeing her inner dreams of like wanting a family with Arthur.
But I think that comes back to my point and the quote I said about her not wanting access to the life her friend has, but appreciating hearing about it. Like she doesn't want it, but that'd be kind of nice, like everybody else. Yeah. Like I think she has that in her.
Totally. I agree.
Yeah.
And there's a quote I've got from when she did go to London. Because by the way, this book is set in Sydney. And she says, you can relocate your life, but it will still be your life. And I think, she just had that moment where everyone has those moments where you're like, I'm just going to run away from all my problems. And then you're like, oh, the problems still exist. I've just got
to quote Taylor Swift, it's me, I'm the problem, it's me.
But it was
well, and then we enter lockdown. I wasn't ready for that. I wasn't really thinking about the time zone. And so as a Brit, where everything went to shit here, and I actually know of someone that was in Australia in the pandemic and had a work colleague who went back to Australia in the pandemic and was like joining Zoom calls from a hotel room quarantine.
Yeah,
so I had like
so
sort of
I.
seen it. So but then to hear about, like, Hera says that she's like walking around the streets and she feels guilt that like England was such a shit show, and in Australia after their 2 weeks of quarantine they're like, hey girl, like absolutely fine living their lives
because they dealt with it how every other country should have dealt with it. But she also wants to shake them and be like, people are dying, the world is on fire, and we're here like just chilling on the beach. I get that.
Your government did it well, so I think that's absolutely fair enough. But even us, like, we couldn't even compare what it must have been like in India.
Yeah, I know.
So, yeah, it was interesting. I love a little lockdown throwback now these days, now that there's been enough time.
Yeah, I mean, I think the way their relationship plays out is not really it is a relationship, but it's all done in secrets. And like she says, she gets to know all of the local hotels that do morning check-in and afternoon check-out, which are just for affairs, which is so bleak.
Well, and she know, like, walking a certain way, wearing a certain thing, not really paying attention when she's out with friends, not wanting to go out with friends so that she can be readily available to him. Like, I just found it all so believable. And like, she's literally living this half life.
Yeah.
In the end, but she's absolutely happy to for that sliver of love I mentioned. And I don't know if Madeline Gray had an affair, but like it's all like so real.
Oh my like, God. Yeah. Really good
to
point.
Think about that, those tiny little details that you would
exactly.
only think about if you were the other woman.
Yeah. And she, I think it's in part two where you start seeing how the, you know, part two is the beginning of their relationship essentially. And she's out with her friends having a really nice time. And I think they're at a gallery or something. And then she looks at her phone and she sees she's had 12 missed texts from him, or 12 texts from him wanting to meet her for 10 minutes. Because he said, I can sneak out for a 10 minute walk. Come and see me. And he texts her like 12 times and he's annoyed by the end of it. And then by the time she's read the messages, it's obviously way too late. And it's from that moment on that she stops seeing her friends and going out with her friends in the hope that she'll be able to see him for 10 minutes on a Saturday night. Oh, that, like, that was crunchy.
It's mad. And like, you want to shake her.
Yeah.
But you are also, or at least I was, like completely empathetic. Like I know how much she loves him and how much it means to her that she's happy to do this. So like I wanted it for her, even though I really wanted her to stop acting like such a fucking tit.
Yeah, and she stops telling her friends about the relationship because she knows her friends won't approve. But equally, I'm like, I want her friends to ask more questions because she can do so much better. She can have this relationship with somebody who's not married, but she doesn't see that as an option.
I think because she's never had it before.
Yeah,
she's
exactly.
Like, that person doesn't exist. They're all young and stupid.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Oh, Hera.
More fish in the sea, Hera. Anyway, I thought maybe we, I don't know if you've got them. I've got loads of fucking funny quotes from this book, but maybe we could just share like just a few off, like few quotes. Not that necessarily linked to a topic. So I'll start us off with one towards the very end of the book.
Okay.
I mean, I know it has happened, but like in the same way that I know management consultants are literally speaking words when they explain their jobs to me, even as I cannot hear them. There are so many jobs out there that I'll ask someone what they do and they'll tell me and I'll be like, cool,
just words.
You've just done gobbledygook at me.
Have you got another one?
I've got fucking tons. This one here, really short one. Page 167. It just really made me giggle. Oh shit, no, not this one. Sorry. This is really annoying of me. 125. I promise it'll be worth it. There's too many pages of quotes. That's how good this book is. The drinks, much like the years, start coming and they don't stop coming. It just made me think of the song in Shrek. And then I had the song and I was like trying to read on to the beat of the song. And I was like, nope, it's definitely just the one line. But there's just, everything is written in this funny little witty way.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I think that's why we loved it so much. And it was such an easy read and something different because I was in it for the humor because
yes,
there's nothing really happens in the plot.
But I also a lot wouldn't... happens in the plot.
Do you think? I mean, like very basic level, the plot is it's an affair. Like you know what's going to happen at the beginning and you're told at the start how it ends.
Yeah.
But you're in it for her inner monologue, which I think changes towards the end as well in chapter four. She like starts talking to the reader, which I thought was very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I found another one, which this is where I was like, this book is so for me. So she says, whereas when your relationship is secret, this necessarily limits the number of parties involved in the development of your intimacy. There is you and there is them, abstracted, removed from the rhythms of shared daily life. The two of you will teach each other everything. You teach each other your lives because the description is only access each of you has to the other's existence. It's like when Hallie and Annie plan to swap lives after summer camp, so they spend all their time in their little cabin, memorizing the floor plan of the other's houses, learning what nicknames their family members go by. And I was like, sorry, but any book that references Parent Trap is going to be in my top 10.
Oh, that's so good. I don't have any of my quotes with me, I'm afraid.
That's okay.
Apart from that one.
When you can maybe get your reading journal at another episode, I'd still like to hear them. I've got loads more, but I won't bore people with them. Basically, really fucking brilliant book.
Brilliant.
And so what we thought we would do is maybe just reference to a few books that we have actually talked about on the podcast before. So we're not going to dive deep into them. But should Green Dot get you thinking about illicit affairs? Here's a couple more. And they're all slightly different. And I'd say what these books have in common is purely the fact that they have an affair in them. They're actually really different books. So my first one is Luster by Raven Leilani. And this is similar to Green Dot in that she's the other woman, but in this book, the wife knows. And it ends up being this kind of weird open marriage thing. Mm-hmm. I'll just drop this one up briefly. Edie is just trying to survive. She's messing up in her dead-end admin job in her... I mean, that sounds pretty similar, I know.
Yeah.
In her all-white office, is sleeping with all the wrong men and has failed at the only thing that meant anything to her, painting. No one seems to care that she doesn't really know what she's doing with her life beyond looking for her next hookup. And then she meets Eric, a white middle-aged archivist with a suburban family, including a wife who has a sort of agreed to an open marriage and an adopted black daughter who doesn't have a single person in her life who can show her how to do her hair. As if navigating the constantly shifting landscape of sexual and racial politics as a young black woman wasn't already hard enough. With nowhere else left to go, Edie finds herself falling headfirst into Eric's home and family. It's quite a short book. I think it's only like maybe less than 300 pages. Lots of quotable, witty lines like this, but like, as I think the description would have told you, like way more complex, like so much more at play, which I think would come from the affair kind of being in an open marriage situation where you then live in the house and you then kind of become a role model for his daughter because you're the only black presence in her life. And you're also navigating the wife and like, oh, so much to think about in that book.
a good book,
a good thinking book, I'd say.
Okay. My illicit affair reco is from a married woman who is the person who's having the affair, and it's Fault Lines by Emily Atami, and here's the snop. Mizuki is a Japanese housewife. She has a hard-working husband, two adorable children, and a beautiful Tokyo apartment. It's everything a woman could want, yet sometimes she wonders whether it would be more fun to throw herself off the high-rise balcony than spend another evening not talking to her husband or hanging up laundry. Then one rainy night, she meets Kiyoshi, a successful restaurateur. In him, she rediscovers freedom, friendship, a voice, and the neon electric pulse of the city she has always loved. But the further she falls into their relationship, the clearer it becomes that she is living two lives, and in the end we can only choose one. I loved this book so much, and it's interesting actually, it's a short book like Luster, but it's interesting to think it would be cool to read these back to back to see how a man navigates an affair and how a woman navigates an affair.
Yeah, well, I can't remember what book it was now, but we've definitely talked about it before with an author that like the other woman, like there isn't, or mistress, there isn't really the equivalent term for a man.
Yeah,
I can't remember what book it was now, but yeah, or maybe it was, no, I'm not gonna guess, but yeah, what is that terminology? Are you the other man? I haven't really heard that phrase before.
That's a really good point. Yeah, I remember having that conversation. I can't remember who it was with.
I don't know. No, anyway. And then the last one, very mainstream book, was chosen by Reese Witherspoon, was also longlisted for the Women's Prize, is Paper Palace by Miranda Cowley Heller. And this is, it's more of a fling, not an affair. The book happens across 24 hours. And it's with like almost childhood / the one that got away vibes getting in the way. So the woman is married. I'll read this not. Before anyone else is awake, on a perfect August morning, Elle Bishop heads out for a swim in the glorious freshwater pond below the Paper Palace, the gently decaying summer camp in the backwoods of Cape Cod, where her family has spent every summer for generations. As she passes the house, Elle glances through the screen porch at the uncleared table from dinner the previous evening. Empty wine glasses, candle wax on the tablecloth, echoes of laughter of family and friends. Then she dives beneath the surface of the freezing water to the shocking memory of the sudden, passionate encounter she had the night before, up against the wall behind the house as her husband and mother chatted to the guests inside. So begins a story that unfolds over 24 hours and across 50 years, as decades of family legacies, love, lies, secrets, and one unspeakable incident in her childhood led Elle to the precipice of a life-changing decision. Over the next 24 hours, Elle will have to decide between the world she has made with her much-loved husband, Peter, and the life she imagined would be hers with her childhood love, Jonas. If a tragic event hadn't forever changed the course of their lives. Shit, that's a good synopsis.
Isn't it? So juicy.
Yeah.
The drama in that book.
Oh. The drama in all of these books. Yeah. I love an illicit affair, me.
Let's live vicariously through these books.
Yeah, yeah. Would actually be quite devastated if I found out my husband was having an affair.
Quite
unless it was with Hera, I'd be like, cool, let's open marriage though. She's really funny. She's going to hate me. Let's bring her in.
That is the quote of the episode. Ah, cool, let's open marriage this. Let's bring her in. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, like, subscribe, leave a rating and review. It costs you nothing, but it genuinely means the world to us.
And don't forget to share our podcast with your reading buddy, because they might like to listen as well. And if you don't already, then follow us on Instagram at BookRecos for, funnily enough, more book recommendations.
See you next week.
We'll be here.